This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on Sustainable Development Goals, Challenges and Solutions. The participants are Anand Sharma, Senior Environmentalist, and Dr. Shelly Kedia, Associate Director at TERI. Moderator is Anubha Rodki.
The 24th edition of World Sustainable Development Summit, organized by the Energy and Resources Institute, TERI, concluded in New Delhi today. The theme of the three-day program was Partnerships for Accelerating Sustainable Development and Climate Solutions, and it was attended by global leaders, policymakers, industry experts and other stakeholders. I'm now joined by Dr. Shelly Kedia, Senior Fellow in TERI, and Mr. Anand Sharma, Senior Environmentalist, to discuss the summit's importance and its outcomes. Dr. Kedia, Mr. Sharma, welcome to Akashvani's Current Affairs program. Dr. Kedia, Mr. Anand Sharma, at a time when the Earth has recorded 2024 as the hottest year on record and we saw climate change-fueled fires ravaging Southern California, how crucial is a summit such as the WSDS?
The World Sustainable Development Summit, one of the primary roles is to drive agendas at all levels, whether it is at the global level, whether it is at a regional level, whether it is at the national level, subnational level, or even at the city or village level. So the thing is, when we see, you know, we see a lot of political fluctuations around the world as far as taking climate change as a top priority in the political level. So the summit like WSDS has to reinforce the importance of putting climate change at the forefront of all policy agendas so that policy across the world takes it seriously. And the fact is that climate change is a global issue. So we have to keep this momentum alive. And the primary function of the World Sustainable Development Summit is to drive ambition and action at all levels for this very crucial issue for which we have very less time to address.
I think it's quite timely and relevant because the entire globe is facing major environmental issues and climate change is also one of them. And the major reason behind that is global warming and greenhouse gas emissions. So naturally, we have all seen that extreme events are increasing intensity as well as frequency. But although we should also remember, all the events are not because of climate change. Many of them are because of natural climate variability. Climate change is an additional pressure on already existing natural climate variability, which is because of anthropogenic reasons, because of human utilization of global resources. And in doing that, we are emitting more and more greenhouse gases. And these greenhouse gases has a property to absorb the outgoing radiation and thereby leading to rise in temperature of the planet Earth. And we all know that already we have crossed the limit of 1.5 degrees. And as you said, 2024 was
the hottest year on record.
And already in Paris Agreement, we have decided that we should not allow the Earth temperature to go beyond 1.5 degrees and especially 2 degrees. If it goes beyond that, then it will be point of no return. That means then we will not be able to sort of change the scenario. So it is very crucial that we create enough awareness about these, global issues into the general masses, to the planners, to everyone, that if you do not act now, then the problem is going to be enormous. Mm-hmm. And then we will not be able to tackle it. And its harmful effects will be too many, which will be a problem.
Dr. Kedia, this year's theme is Partnerships for Accelerating Sustainable Development and Climate Solutions. Can you tell us more about it?
Yes, what we see is in the present context, this year, 2015, will soon mark 10 years anniversary of the adoption of Sustainable Development Goals. It will mark a 10-year anniversary of the adoption of Paris Climate Agreement. Yet if we see the latest reports, whether it's the Sustainable Development Progress Report, we are gravely off track. Out of 169 targets, only 14% of targets are on track. In fact, 14% have even gone back to where it was in the baseline year, and 20% are not even track. If we look at the global stocktake, we see that we are not on track to meeting the Paris temperature goals. So what we need is accelerators. And we see partnerships as a crucial factor and a driver of this acceleration that is needed in the next 5 years. When we talk about partnerships, and I can say this from a research institute like TERI, we can come up with technologies, but to scale it up, we'll have to do that in collaboration with the private sector. TERI can come up with policy concepts and policy innovations, but the uptake has to be with the governments. So, and plus, spread it to the masses. We have to work with youth. We have to work with organizations that have a larger reach across the people, even through media organizations such as yours. So this is what we feel partnership is all about. And this is why we chose this as a crucial theme, because it's time that each of us, all stakeholders, work together in partnerships and drive this acceleration that is needed.
Mr. Sharma, the Paris Agreement that you've just mentioned, you know, it has set a goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Now, in his inaugural address at the summit, Union Minister for Environment, Forest and Climate Change, Bhupendra Yadav, said India has already achieved 36% reduction in emission intensity of the GDP between 2005 and 2020, compared to the 45% target for 2030. So how do you view India's progress in its fight against climate change?
I think it's a very welcome step. India has taken this initiative to reduce the emission intensity of its economy by 45% by 2030. And not only that, India has also taken initiative to reduce the carbon emission by 1 billion tons from now to 2030.
Yes.
And in addition to that, India has also taken an initiative to turn to renewable energy. And right now, I think we are generating about around 170 gigatons of renewable energies, and we want to achieve the target of 500 gigatons by 2030. So that's a very big initiative by India. And in addition to that, India has also taken an initiative, International Solar Alliance, where our Prime Minister Narendra Modi ji has taken a lead role. And this is an alliance of sunshine countries. And we have also taken initiative, One Sun, One World and One Grid, so that, you know, we can share the energy, which is especially in like country in India, where we are in tropical region, sun is overhead most of the time, so we can generate lots of solar energy. And we feed into the grid, and then around 140 countries, they can make use of it. So if we do that, and we have also a target that by 2030, we will have 50% energy from the renewable sources.
Right.
So that's a big step. And then ultimate step is carbon neutrality by 2070. Who knows, we might achieve it earlier also. So there are many initiatives, EV vehicles.
Yes.
So all these are initiatives towards renewable energy, and India is going in a big way.
Talking about India, now India's northeast is very rich in biodiversity and wildlife, which are one of the most vulnerable sections to climate change. So at this point in discussion, let me bring in Akashvani's correspondent Manas Pratim Sharma into the discussion. Manas, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Anubha.
Good evening. Manas, as I was saying, that the northeast part of the country is very rich in biodiversity and wildlife, which are again being impacted in a big way by climate change. So what are the steps being taken to protect them?
Well, and there are multiple approaches. Yes, along with the government initiative, there are organizations, there are people who are working towards, to name few, starting from Assam, we know Padma Shri Awardee Jadav Payeng, who planted thousands of saplings to increase the green coverage in those areas, particularly in the Upper Assam. Then recently, we have a success that the lady who is known as Hargila Baido, Baido means Didi here, so Greater Exclusion Stock for conservation of the Greater Exclusion Stock in Kamrup district, which is not too far from Guwahati, she has been featured in the Time magazine. So the activities, like the involvement of the people, and there are many success stories. If you go to the Kaziranga National Park, World Heritage Site, so there are stories of rhino conservation. If you come to the Manas National Park at Barpetat and Lower Assam, particularly Assam, there are the rhino translocation, which is again a success story. There are stories of water conservation. If you come to Sikkim in Gangtok, where I am right now, people are so much aware to maintain the greenery, to cleanliness, to protect the water and natural items. So all like multiple approaches from the governments, NGOs, and the people's participation, which is very important in terms of if you go to the Kaziranga, the success story of the Kaziranga, which extremely reduced the number of rhino poachings in the last 6 to 7 years. One of the main reasons behind is that the people's participation. So these are the success stories, we can say, as well, Anubha.
Thank you for that update, Manas. Union Minister Bhupendra Yadav, in his inaugural address during the summit, also called on developed countries to honour their financial and technological commitments, especially in fulfilling their obligations under the Paris Agreement. Let us first listen to what the minister said.
We all are witnessing the impacts of climate change. As per latest UNEP emission gap report of 2024, it is still technically possible for us to stay on the 1.5 degrees Celsius pathway. With solar energy, wind power and forest offering tremendous potential for significant and rapid reductions in emissions. However, to fully unlock this potential, we must act with urgency and developed countries should honour and fulfil their obligations, in particular of means of implementation.
Mr. Sharma, we just heard the minister, but also pertinent here is that President Trump, just 2 months ago in January, announced that the US is pulling out of the Paris Accord. How will this impact climate financing? And how important is it to, you know, maintain the finances for tackling climate change? Because it's very crucial for developing countries which are the most affected.
Yeah, absolutely right. President Trump said, you know, drill, baby, drill.
Yes.
One. And second thing, he is pulled out of Paris Agreement. And he is not, I mean, promoting what I should say, techniques to combat climate change. But what I'll say, yes, finance is a big issue. Developing countries have been telling that, you know, all this crisis, climate crisis, so-called climate crisis, is because of developed countries, because they are the ones who have pumped all the major greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And now they should help us either financially or technology. So we need both. Developing countries need finance, they need technology. But then, yes, if they withdraw at this moment, it's a sort of, it's not a positive signal. But what I say is India has taken a lead and they should continue to lead. And it's time, you know, there's an opportunity right now for us. We can be the global leaders.
Okay.
So this is one opportunity for us. And not only global leaders as in technology as well. For example, we can come in a big way in International Solar Alliance in renewable energies. We can go for photovoltaic cell technology. That also we can. Then, especially EV vehicles. EV vehicles, two-wheelers and three-wheelers, India is already a leader. But we have to bring EV vehicles in two and three-wheelers. And we can be the world leaders. And slowly in the four-wheelers as well. So I consider this, maybe President Trump has withdrawn. But I see it's an opportunity. And we should take this lead. And I think our Prime Minister has already taken a lead. And if the private also joins together, we can definitely show the world that we can tackle this problem. And I'm sure, I'm very optimistic that we will be able to tackle these issues. But yes, we have to get some more finances from the maybe Europeans or some other countries who are ready to share their funds with us.
What role can the private sector play in tackling climate change? And how can we have enabling policies and regulations so that the private sector starts investing in climate sector?
Definitely, private sector has a very, very important role to play. One example is, of course, scaling up technology, scaling up not just technologies and products, but processes and innovations in general. Private sector also need to invest in it. In this private sector, it's not as if that we always have to see private sectors as solution providers. Sometimes they have to really be put under regulatory. They have to also follow regulations or certain norms that have to be put. So that is there, and the private sector, of course, have to come in with the investments, with the finance that is needed. When we talk about, there is a lot of buzzwords that is going around, including ESG. Yet when we talk about the investments that are available, there is, at least in India, as compared to many other countries, not as much as going in ESG-related investments. So that is another role and another crucial role that the private sector can play. Now, the role of government and policy enabling environment, yes, regulations have to be there. There has to be certain advisories from the government. Also, the governments themselves have to give the right policy signal. So Terry, for example, works a lot in areas such as green public procurement. And if the government adopts green public procurement, it can send those market signals and private sectors can accordingly produce those kinds of goods and services. So this is, yes, a quick take.
At this point, let me bring into the discussion Prasar Bharati's special correspondent in Dhaka, Mr. Naval Kishore. Mr. Naval Kishore, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Mr. Kishore, the mangroves play a very crucial role, you know, and they are being impacted by climate change. So how are the mangroves being impacted by climate change and what is being done to restore them?
Well, Sundarban is one of the largest mangrove forests in the world, and that is shared by India and Bangladesh. Around 10,250 square kilometers of Sundarban mangrove forest. Of them, around 6,000 square kilometers is in Bangladesh and 4,250 square kilometers in India. And mangrove forest of Sundarban are the silent protector of the Bengal as well as Bangladesh coast. And that we have seen in the recent cyclone Remel, where the mangrove forest as a first line of defense protected the large area of Bangladesh as well as India from the impact of the cyclone. Yes, mangrove is there and they are protector, but who will protect the mangroves? That is the big question. Actually, here in Bangladesh, many political influential people are intruding into the mangroves areas. They are clearing the mangrove forest and they are creating a shrimp farm. That is seen in the Cox Bazar side also, as well as the Sundarban area also. Sundarban is largely protected area, so there are less chance, but the other areas or other part of Bangladesh is having a very large coastline, and there is a mangroves in Cox Bazar line 2, Chittagong Hill Track 2. So there is a huge intrusion from the influential people, and as we know that Bangladesh is passing through the lex law and order situation here in Bangladesh. So this kind of situation or this kind of incidents are increasing day by day. Second thing, the population of Bangladesh. Bangladesh is having around 1,45,000 square kilometer area, and it is having around 22 crore population. So huge population is also creating a risk for the mangrove forests in Bangladesh.
Right. Thank you for that update, Mr. Kishore. Mr. Sharma, we just heard Prasar Bharati's special correspondent in Dhaka, Mr. Naval Kishore, and he specially mentioned the population of Bangladesh, how that is very crucial. From Dhaka, let's go to Odisha and listen to this report about the endangered species olive ridley turtles, who congregate there every year to hatch their eggs, and how climate change is impacting it.
In a spectacular display of nature's wonder, thousands of olive ridley turtles have begun to hatch on the coast of Odisha. It marks the beginning of their breeding season. Odisha's chief wildlife warden, Prem Kumar Jha, in a social media post said that olive ridley turtles' mass nesting has commenced at Garimata Marine Sanctuary, which is the world's largest rookery. This event follows a record-breaking 6,98,000 olive ridley mass nesting at the Rishikulya River in the state. Olive ridley turtles are the smallest and most abundant of all sea turtles in the world. They get their name from the olive green color of their heart-shaped shell and inhabit warm waters of the Pacific, Atlantic, and Indian Oceans. Olive ridley turtles lay their eggs in flask-shaped nests about a foot and a half deep, which they dig with their hind flippers. On an average, one turtle lays 50 to 100 eggs during a season. The eggs incubate under the sand for a period of 45 to 55 days, depending on the weather conditions. After the mass nesting, the females head back into the sea and typically migrate back to their foraging grounds. After about 45 to 65 days, the eggs begin to hatch and the baby turtles crawl towards the sea. Turtle researchers say no one knows why olive ridley turtles skip a nesting ground. The olive ridley turtles usually come to Garimata Marine Sanctuary by the end of February, but this year they were delayed by a week. Experts suspect that climatic conditions might be responsible for the delay. Every year, these endangered turtles migrate to the coastal waters of Odisha, particularly to the Garimata Marine Sanctuary, to lay their eggs. This year, conservation efforts have paid off with a significant increase in the number of turtles nesting on the beach.
Let's talk about India. India has the world's biggest population. So moving forward, when we have a target of making India a Viksit Bharat by 2047 and with world's the biggest population, what are the challenges that lie ahead of India and what is being and how can these be tackled when it comes to, you know, tackling climate change?
India has a huge population and we have to provide roti, kapda and makan to all of them. And we remember, whatever we do, like our production as well as consumption should be sustainable and responsible. That's the most important thing. Because if we are producing things inefficiently, if we are producing food inefficiently, that all contributes to greenhouse gases. We want development, but we want development with least destruction.
Yes.
That should be our goal. But right now, that's not happening. Like many of the, like whether it is energy or maybe it is, for example, your agriculture production, lots of chemicals and fertilizers are being used and it is fossil based. So naturally, it is not that efficient. That's why people have started talking about the resilient agriculture, mm-hmm. regenerative agriculture, so that we reduce our carbon footprint, make it more efficient. So that's the thing. That is one. Second, as I already said, we are already moving towards the renewables. So if we want to be sustainable, we have to be more efficient in terms of energy production. Even like, for example, if any energy, we have to produce batteries.
Yes.
So if they're expensive, then people will not be able to buy those cars. So we have to bring the cost down. Similarly, if your solar voltaic cells, if their panels are, you know, cheaper, so then everyone can start utilizing it and our dependence on fossil fuel generated electricity will be reduced. There are many ways. And then another issue is that we have to tell people that they should change their lifestyle. Right now, their lifestyle is, I should say, we are a society of wastrels. Waste lots of things. We waste food, we waste energy, we waste most of the things. And we have polluted our soil, air, water, all natural resources we have polluted. So that kind of awareness has to be created that these natural resources has to be protected and conserved. And our lifestyle should be simple. That's what people have started talking about, minimalism. But then the question comes, there has to be balance. If you follow the minimalism, then you don't buy things.
And that will impact economic development.
It will develop economic development. So that's what we have. We want like the goals of sustainable goals, reducing poverty, protecting the planet, and peace and prosperity and economic development. So naturally, we want economic development also. And luckily, because we have a huge population, so our factories, our industries can produce and there are a lot of people to consume it. But then production as well as consumption has to be responsible. That should be the main goal.
The global south, especially countries like India, are among the most affected by climate change impacts. In such a scenario, how do you view government's increasing emphasis on energy security, expanding clean energy capacity and fostering domestic manufacturing of green technologies?
Yes, definitely. If you see the last budget announcement, there has been, and even the previous ones, there have been lots of announcements related to green technology, related to green critical minerals, solar rooftops, of course, biofuels. So I think there has been, you know, these kind of policy signals that has kind of gone out. And definitely India has to take a role as a global south leader. One of the background conditions where WSDS was happening, a complete vacuum in many sense of the leadership of the global north. You know, you are seeing what is happening in the Oval Office, the kind of yes. signals that are coming from there. Europe is comparatively weak as compared to what it was in the previous Trump regime because of the conflict situation in Europe. So the global north is not as strong. You know, it is the global south that has to step up, and it is in its own interest. Energy security, you mentioned, you know, in the Independence Day speech marking that was done the 75 years, Prime Minister Modi announced that India has to be energy secure when it becomes 100 years. And that can only happen from clean energy transitions. So, yes, a lot of measures is being taken, but still much more is needed, especially when we are talking about energy on the demand side.
Talking about the summit, among the many guests, among the many keynote speakers, this year, the Prime Minister of Guyana, Mark Phillips, was also there. Then the Brazil's Minister of Environment and Climate Change, Marina Silva, was there, among others. So let's first listen into what the Prime Minister of Guyana had to say in his keynote address.
Since the adoption of the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, there have been some advancements in SDG 7. The number of people across the globe without electricity has almost halved, and from 1.1 billion in 2010 to 675 million in 2021. Moreover, the renewable energy share in energy consumption has increased from 16% in 2010 to 19.1% in 2020. Notably, renewable energy proliferation in developing countries significantly grew by almost 10% annually.
Dr. Kedia, can you share some of the takeaways that came out, you know, how these countries are tackling climate change?
See, climate change is definitely an issue of survival. Even a small country like Guyana, you know, in many ways is serving like a role model. It was one of the first countries that played a very, very active role in reducing emissions from deforestation and land degradation. Also, it came out with a low carbon development strategy, and it is taking its nature-based solutions very seriously. And the fact that, like, you know, the Prime Minister also highlighted the fact that countries like Guyana, most of the global south countries, they are really not the historical emitters. They're not historically responsible, but there is a global attempt to shift that responsibility, unfortunately, to developing countries. Now, however, notwithstanding the unfair global outcomes, it is role models and lighthouses like Guyana, like many of the global south countries, that are examples for other countries, and other countries are getting inspired, and we remain very hopeful about that. And the fact that this summit will amplify such voices and such practices.
Now, when we talk about this World Sustainable Development Summit, of course, there were world leaders there, there were experts there, there were stakeholders there, and they were discussing about how to, you know, move forward in order to achieve these sustainable goals. But when we talk about the common man at the very basic level, what can people do at their own level to ensure sustainability, to ensure that we leave the minimum of carbon footprints and that we move forward and we contribute in our own way to tackling climate change?
Right. Individuals can definitely contribute, but major change has to be from the government. Individuals can contribute, jaise hum kehte hain, boond boond se. So individual has a major role to play. As I said, you also said, we have to reduce our carbon footprint. One. Second thing, we have to increase our handprint. That means actions. What actions we take to reduce our carbon footprint? For example, you are in Delhi. So don't use your car. Instead, you use metro. Metro is so good, efficient, and you reach always on time. So that's very good issue. So I think that we need to promote these kind of mass transports everywhere. Secondly, photovoltaic cells. If the cost comes down and people start using solar panels, we have, I think, plenty of bright hours of sunshine in Delhi, so you can harvest solar energy and you need not depend on fossil fuel generated. So that's another thing. Thirdly, I mean, for small work, you need not take your bike or car. You can walk down. In European countries, they have started a concept called 30 minutes or 20 minute cities. That means from your house to city, any part of the city, you can reach within 15 to 20 minutes, either by cycle or by walking.
In fact, they have dedicated cycle lanes.
Lanes also. So similarly, we have to develop those cycle lanes, and then we have to plan the cities in such a way that people need not have to travel for 2 hours or 3 hours. That. So that kind of thing. And then on top of that, building design. There are many things can be done. Now you see the example of Gurgaon. The buildings are just glass and cement structures. They are very, very inefficient. AC bills goes by 30%. I mean, why are we following those kind of things? Again, building design has to change. So there are n number of things, right from your simple. And again, how many houses you need, how many clothes you need, how many shoes you need, have to, I mean, you know, put a break somewhere so that we are not burden on the environment. And then simple, again, people start using their own bags instead of using polythene. So again, government has already banned single use of plastic. That's again a big contribution. Otherwise, people were using it, burning it and throwing it everywhere. Then in addition to that, you have the bulbs which have come recently. Those bulbs, you know, they consume very less power. Earlier, people were using 100 watt bulb, 60 watt bulb. But now with even a 9 watt bulb, you get equivalent amount of energy. So these are some of the ways by which individual can contribute.
What are the key takeaways of the World Sustainable Development Summit this year?
Yes, I would frame this that there are three main key takeaways within the context of the umbrella themes. So one is the fact that this is the third cycle of the nationally determined contribution. We are headed towards COP 30. COP 33 roadmap, where the second global stocktake will take place. We have to really revisit as to how we can make the multilateral system more effective as far as climate action is concerned. The second aspect is the fact that sustainable development definitely needs acceleration, whether it is in terms of technology, whether it's in terms of enabling environment, and definitely partnerships. And the third key takeaway is the fact that Global South has to continue to play a leadership role. We cannot be too hopeful with the vacuum that is there in Global North leadership. So Global South leadership will actually have to be the lighthouse, as it is in its own best interest.
Dr. Kedia, Mr. Sharma, thank you so much for joining Akashvani's Current Affairs program and sharing your views on the important topic of climate change.
Thank you so much.
You were listening to a discussion on sustainable development goals, challenges and solutions. The participants were Anand Sharma, senior environmentalist, and Dr. Shelley Kedia, associate director at TERI. Moderator was Anubha Rodke. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.